Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Drive Pink Dialogue. This is episode number 18. It's Wednesday night of what seems like the longest week of the year, but I am your host, Scotty. I'm here with my co-host, Soar, and we're here to talk about Inter-Miami soccer. How are you feeling tonight, man?
Yeah, it's midweek without a game. Feels sort of empty, but I think it's the right time to take stock of everything Inter-Miami and given the result from last weekend and the kind of questions that have been raised, I think this is a timely podcast and it'll be good to just get some things off the chest, put things in perspective and see what the overall season might hold in store for Inter Miami. A lot to discuss, so let's start.
Yeah, this week a lot slower than last week after we got a bad result on Saturday afternoon. It was a lot more fun the week after winning on the road than it was losing 4-0. I just want to get another game in so we can make up for that. In today's episode, we're going to be talking about the five things Inter-Miami needs to do or have by the time the big games come around for them to win 4 trophies this season. And considering the result on Saturday afternoon, like you said, I think it's a poignant time to discuss this because some of those big flaws were pointed out on Saturday and maybe some of the confidence that we had in our team's ability to do those types of things is not as strong as it was just a few days ago. But let's start with some quick hitters from the Inter-Miami world, and let's start with just a fun light note. Neymar in Miami this week, it sounds like he met Sergio Busquets at a Miami Heat game. He was hanging out with Jimmy Butler. So he's in Miami. It's a town I'm sure he's familiar with. But, you know, he's a guy that a lot of Inter-Miami fans can dream about, especially considering we might get a third DP opening spot this summer. Not for this summer, but maybe for next summer or moving forward. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I know a team in Miami that might be interested in the services of a winger like Neymar. And that team's not Orlando, so you never know. Now we can dream about it. A summer move to bolster our squad and maybe take us to those 4 trophies, that I won't be opposed to that. But yeah, I think it's just one of those things during the international break where you have friends meeting up, and Miami's always a good town for players to catch up and rest. So yeah, good to have him in town.
Yeah, he's still under contract with his club in Saudi Arabia for another year, but when that contract expires, it does feel like a move to MLS could be in the cards. And as much as Orlando City fans think that their local population gives them an edge, I'm sure Neymar would have more fun and appreciate being in Miami just a bit more. Let's get into some more serious stuff, though. It sounds like we've got some news on the Marcelo Wiegandt front. The club has still not officially announced anything, but his name does appear on the MLS website. Michelle Kaufman wrote that it was official today. So it feels like we're in the next couple hours or days, we're going to get official word on Wiegandt joining the club.
Big, big move. I think this move needs to be done as soon as yesterday. We've seen that Tata Martino's hesitant to play the 4-3-3 without an out-and-out right back. I think having Wiegandt come in is going to bring us back to that 4-3-3 formation. I know you have started to hate the 3-5-2. I have started to hate the 3-5-2. And I can't wait for a full-blown right back to come in. And you know what? I think we might even need another one. If Tata's unwilling to use his rear boat right, I think we might even need a backup. But for now, having that one right back is going to be really, really refreshing. And I hope that brings in the much needed reinforcements in that position.
Yeah, he was a guy that Inter-Miami targeted almost immediately after they traded DeAndre Yedlin. So he was the guy they wanted to replace Yedlin. And it's good to finally sort of get him in the picture. Hopefully he's eligible for Saturday's game against NYCFC because I would love to see him get a run out with the team before next week's midweek game against Monterrey. But it does feel like there was an update today, so I thought it was worth mentioning. In other news, also sort of big for the MLS referee lockout officially ended. We were dealing with the replacement referees for the first 5 games of the season, 6 games of the season, and that is now over. It doesn't feel like Inter-Miami was hurt too badly by the referees, but that Montreal game, especially in extra time, was frustrating. And of course, in every game, there's frustrating calls that you don't love from the refs. So there will be no more excuses from this point on.
Yeah, we discussed about this at the start when the lockdown happened. And we said that we're going to come back after the referees are paid off and after they reinstate the first preference referees in, and hopefully we won't have too many controversial decisions to talk about. As you mentioned, Inter Miami kind of got away unscathed from this, which is great, but refereeing standards haven't been the best in the last few weeks. We've had some issues with a few calls here and there. Obviously, I think every team feels like the referees are targeting their own. So we have a few complaints, but nothing major. I don't think there were any decisions that went against us, which cost us games outright, which is a good sign. But I'm hoping going forward, the refereeing standards improve and just get a lot better.
Yeah, well, I have no doubt we'll still be complaining about the referees, even when the officials come, the regulars come back. Just before we get into some of the more exciting injury news, I wanted to make a note of Leo Afonso. We saw him for the first time on Saturday. He came up in the B team. He started for the B team again on Sunday. He scored another two goals for the B team. So he's now played two games for the B team. He scored four goals. He cameoed with the A team on Saturday, and he was the best player for Inter Miami, I think. Inter Miami doesn't have a roster spot for him to sign him to a first team contract, but is there a way this player, especially considering we don't have a ton of depth in the forward line, is this a player that could play himself into a first team contract and not only get himself a contract, but get someone else off the roster to make it happen?
So for that to happen, we have three more chances to bring him up from the B team to the first team, right? In the next coming months. And then we have the summer to decide whether we want to bring him up and maybe make a roster place for him. I can see that happening. He's a very exciting prospect. I think definitely one of those players that I would want to have off the bench coming in, because I think he's very exciting. He brings a level of dynamism that we don't necessarily have in that front line. And the last game, I think he scored a really good free kick as well. He showed what he was capable of when he came on off the bench against New York Red Bulls. And he's a very exciting prospect that I wouldn't be averse to seeing more of. And this could be someone who could actually play himself into this team. And I can see a few players being dropped down just to accommodate him in. So to answer your question, definitely. Very exciting prospect. I think the academy is looking really good. And it's just positives all around when it comes to Leo Afonso.
Yeah, it's not as simple as just moving a player down. They would have to move someone off the roster. So you're talking about sending a Tyler Hall or an Israel Boatwright or Schneider Borgelin out on loan, or just, you know, moving a player that you wouldn't be planning on replacing with another senior team player. So it's not that simple. But if Leo Afonso is scoring two goals a game for the B team, it feels like he's going to earn that in a way that you can't really deny. And, you know, he's a quick athletic player from what we saw. And he's an effort guy. It seems like he's going to give the effort 100% of the time. And you can always use a guy like that on your bench, especially if you're not the deepest team in the front line. So just something I wanted to keep on people's radar, because it was a good cameo on Saturday, but it feels like there might be a little more something to it. Okay, let's get into the injury updates. Nico Freire doing individual training, Lionel Messi individual training. It feels like neither of those injuries are as bad as maybe our worst nightmares would have said, especially with Freire. I mean, I wouldn't have been surprised if he was gone for 6 weeks with a hamstring injury. It feels like that's not going to be the case with him. And then Messi, I don't know if we're going to see him on Saturday, but it feels like he's a guy that, you know, if it was a really big game, he might be able to go on Saturday. And he feels like he's inching towards playing against Monterrey next Wednesday.
Yeah, honestly, I might even save Messi. Even if he's 100% fit, I would save him against New York FC. I would maybe play Freire off the bench if he's fully fit as well. But these are good signs overall. The fact that they're in individual training on the grass is fantastic news. I think we can definitely see the change in the defense when Freire is not in. I think he offers something very different to that back line, a lot more composure. And yeah, I just I'm glad that it's not a long-term injury for him and rest him over the weekend, but I think we need him ready for the Monterrey game for sure. And Messi, of course, man, I think he's taking it easy. The fact that he didn't play with Argentina in the international break and he didn't even go for camp, like he could have definitely taken this these 2 weeks off and gone and trained with the international team or recover with the international team. The fact that he's here training individually, I think he's getting ready for that Monterrey game. I think the next time we see him is going to be during that midweek game.
Yeah. Listen, I was overconfident about Lionel Messi when he came out of the game against Nashville and kind of played off that it was probably just to keep himself healthy moving forward. I was overconfident about Messi coming back last year when he got injured on international duty. So I think maybe I've learned my lesson about being overconfident with him. But it does feel like, again, at risk of putting myself in a silly situation again and being let down, it does feel like he's going to be available next Wednesday, which is awesome news. And then Freda, you know, I was thinking back to the preseason, and even after we signed him, it took a couple of weeks. He missed the tour. He wasn't available until I think the final preseason game. And then he missed the first game of the regular season. And I'm wondering if this is the same injury that he's been dealing with and he re-aggravated it. And it makes me wonder if a little bit of a more prolonged absence might do him good. And I wonder if maybe we haven't seen the best from him yet because he's been dealing with this sort of nagging hamstring injury. I can't remember if that's what it was in the preseason, but if it is, hopefully he can come back from this and be even better than what we saw so far this season.
Yeah, I think there's definitely potential there. And he needs to get kicking on and get a few consistent minutes in, but you might be right. This might be a recurring injury and it does no harm for him to be on the sidelines for a little bit longer, just recover completely and then come back in.
And listen, we said last week that we don't need these guys to win, but I do think against NYCFC at home, we can definitely get 3 points without Nico Freire. The most exciting news today, though, came from training. Benjamin Kramaski back with the first team in full training. I sort of predicted he would be back for the Colorado game next weekend. It feels like that might be wrong, and we might get him a cameo this Saturday. How exciting is it and how excited are you to get this young player back in the lineup? Or at least
if you had asked me this question a couple of weeks ago before that New York Red Bulls game, I would have been like, you know what? It's great to have him back. Just another option in the midfield. Now, after having seen the depth issues that we can suffer with in the midfield, especially Benja Kramaski's dynamism and athleticism and just him as a player, what he brings to this team is going to be invaluable moving forward into the season. And I can't wait for him to be back. I think the weekend is the perfect opportunity for him to even get 10 minutes out in the grass with the team, get some minutes in his leg to prepare perhaps for the Monterrey game where we may not see him start, but he might have some sort of impact off the bench. But just to have him back available is a big, big plus because he brings in something completely different in this team, which I'm sure we're going to talk about a little bit more in this podcast. But I think it's going to be very important having him fresh and fit moving forward into the season.
Yeah, I remember last season against Dallas in the League's Cup, he came off the bench and completely transformed that game, scored a goal right away. And we kind of got off and running from the moment he came onto the field. And it's always been in my head that if you can have that sort of a weapon off the bench that can come into the midfield and be not just energetic and athletic, but also have the ability in the final third to change a game, it just can be such a weapon. And so even though we sort of have a locked in midfield right now, I believe with Redondo, Busquets and Dio Gomez, it definitely feels like this is a guy who, even if he doesn't start, is going to make an impact. And then when you do need him to start, he's still going to be ready to go. So this is a really nice pickup. It's like adding a new player at this point. And, he's not going to have the impact structurally as Marcelo Wiegand, but it feels like he's going to be a bigger piece when he's actually on the field. Speaking of depth issues, let's just run a quick recap of the international break because we lost six guys to the break, we had a couple injuries, and so we were really depleted in the weekend, and it was not for a lot of good that came about it for these guys. Robert Taylor didn't leave for the international break, but his team failed to qualify for the Euros. Dio Gomez played for the Paraguay national team, except they didn't have any games. Their one friendly with Russia got canceled, so he was gone for no international games. Federico Redondo did not play for the Argentine Olympic team in a friendly against Mexico's U23 team. Schneider Borgelin was on the Haitian national team. I haven't been able to get any info on if he played. And then Israel Boatwright went for the Dominican Olympic team. It sounds like he did play, but I couldn't get any official stats on minutes or anything. It actually sounds like he got a little bit of a cut in the face against the Paraguay Olympic team. The one player that actually had a significant time, and by significant, I mean 34 total minutes over two games, was David Ruiz. Two games against Costa Rica and I want to say El Salvador, but he came off the bench in both games, got 25 minutes in one, 9 in the other. Not that exciting. So the big one is Drake Callender, who won the CONCACAF Nations League, back-to-back champions. I just want to talk about that for a minute because I'm a big USMNT fan. They were my first team when I got into soccer. And so to see them win that game and to dominate Mexico like that was really fun. As much as I would criticize Greg Berhalter for the job he's done, he's always been very good against Mexico. And Gio Reyna, Tyler Adams, it was a really fun game to watch. And Drake Callender got the first CONCACAF trophy of any Inter-Miami player this year, hopefully the first of two.
Yeah, it seems like the balance has shifted over the last few years in North America in international football. I think the U.S. has been dominating against Mexico, who has been a footballing powerhouse as far as I can remember. So a big feat to win these three back-to-back CONCACAF?
Third straight Nations League winning campaign.
Yeah, that's a big deal, honestly. So gives positive signs for the future. There's so much promise in this U.S. national team, and hopefully they can bring in a coach that utilizes that.
I know that you told us that you're not a huge fan of the international break, so I won't bore you any longer, but as a big USMNT fan, I just had to throw that out there. Let's get into the meat of our show.
Before we move into the meat of our show, can I just say, I hate international breaks. They're just so annoying. As you can see, we lost Federico Redondo. We lost Diego Gomez, two players who we could have really done with over the last weekend. And it was just for nothing. So they need to figure out these international games and these schedules, because it just doesn't make sense to disrupt the entire club season. Back to you.
Yeah, I think beating Mexico is always worth it. They had a last second goal against Jamaica in the semifinal to advance. They were losing 1-0 the entire game. Got a goal in like the 97th minute to send it to overtime, and then won in overtime. So an exciting weekend, even if that first game was really frustrating for USMNT fans. Anyone else, you're allowed to have your own feelings, but that's how I feel about it. Anyways, moving into the meat of our episode, today we wanted to talk about the five things Inter-Miami needs to do or have happened for them to win four trophies this season, or at least to be competitive for all four trophies. There is no U.S. Open Cup for this team, so four is the maximum. Before we get into the sort of five that we picked out, give me your thoughts on how this team is doing right now, from a mental perspective, and if they are mentally prepared to go on this sort of quest to win four trophies.
At this point in time, with the current form that we're in, with the current roster that we have, with the current players that are available to us, I still think there are a few pieces missing in this particular team. I'm not sure, I can't put my exact finger on what that is, but there just seems to be something of a spark perhaps, or something of a consistency perhaps, that is missing from this team that makes me say that at this point, we are not capable of challenging for all four trophies in this season. And I'm sure we're going to get into this in our five comments that we have to make. But overall, I think right now this team has a lot of potential that it seems to sort of fall short in some games. Or over the course of 90 minutes, we're not able to display that dominance that we know this team is capable of. And I think as we move forward into the season, as we grow into the season as a team, that might change. But I think at this point in time, there's something that's missing. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on this.
Yeah, listen, we will break that down. And I do want to get your thoughts in more detail when we get to these five things, because not exactly what I thought you'd say off the top, but I maybe am just an eternal optimist, so I feel a little bit better. Let's get to number five, and that is getting the midfield right consistently. We saw in the preseason Julian Gressel, Sergio Busquets, some David Ruiz maybe, and it felt like the midfield, that midfield just couldn't work. There wasn't enough athleticism, there wasn't enough defensive solidity, and there wasn't enough going forward. It felt like we got the midfield into a good place. At one point, we looked good against Orlando City. Diego Gomez made a big difference. And then we sort of morphed into this Redondo, Gomez, Busquets midfield, and it looked really good. And then last week, we played Lawson Sunderland, Julian Gressel, and Sergio Busquets, and we lost not only the midfield battle, but the game. This feels like it's still a work in progress in order to get it right every game and not just when we have our best available.
Correct. I think there are two things off the top that I want to say to start this conversation on this particular point. The first is, I think in terms of the midfield depth across the MLS, this might be the most stacked midfield there is. In terms of availability of personnel, in terms of the quality and in terms of the talent in this midfield, we have Diego Gomez, who is an up-and-coming star who's potentially going to move to Europe soon. We've got Federico Redondo, another up-and-coming Argentinian with a lot of potential. We've got the experience of Sergio Busquets in there. We've got the dynamism and the potential of Ben Hakramaski there as well. Just in terms of the quality that this midfield has available to it, this is absolutely stacked. My problem is that there might be too many good cooks in this equation that we need to solve. As we said, I think we need to figure out the midfield chemistry consistently going forward. At this point in time, we've got the cogs working somehow, but I don't think this is our perfect midfield yet. I think when we lose out someone like Diego Gomez, when we lose out someone like Redondo, who's a really good ball carrier, and we place someone like Sunderland in, the quality just deteriorates and Sergio Busquets by himself is not able to make that difference. So I think in terms of moving forward, this team needs to get that chemistry right, needs to get that combination right. Who's going to sit next to Sergio Busquets? Who's going to be the one who's going to play the 8-10 hybrid role? I think all of these questions that need to be answered, and having so many personnel able to fit into this midfield might actually complicate things. But tell me your top line thoughts on this.
My top line thought is I don't want to see Julian Gressel and Sergio Busquets in the same midfield together. I know that's rather simplistic, but it feels like we're really going to struggle if, especially against athletic teams that have athletic midfielders that know how to get guys into that midfield. We're not going to have enough defensive solidity. We're not going to have enough athleticism, and we're going to really struggle to control midfields, especially against teams that are comfortable on the ball or have good runners or press. I don't want to make it so simple, but it feels like any combination that starts with Sergio Busquets has one defensive partner for him and then has one really athletic player that can get forward, get back, cover the guys, make sure the midfield has enough turbulence to disrupt the other team, and some final third product is going to be a winning midfield. That's what we've seen from Diego Gomez in terms of being that box-to-box guy. That's what we saw last year from Benjamin Kramaski. We saw a little bit in the preseason with David Ruiz. I feel like he's a guy that can slot in there if you need him to. But if you're going to do that, the other midfielder opposite Sergio Busquets needs to be someone that has some defensive chops. That's why they brought in Federico Redondo. I feel like Yannick Bright can play that role. I just don't feel like Julian Gressel can play that role. It seems to me like Gressel and Busquets have to occupy the same role in a midfield in this team. And so having them both in the midfield at the same time is just not going to be a solution.
Yeah, I think I completely agree with you there. And I don't think it's as simple as you're making it out to be. I think the fact that you need to take into account the deficiencies of Sergio Busquets as a player is a big complicated puzzle that you need to solve. I don't think you can have two players of a similar profile, Sergio Busquets, sitting next to him, because that's going to definitely ruin the balance of this midfield. And we know that Sergio Busquets is not going to get dropped. He is ultimately the main cog of this engine. So you have to build around him. For me, I think every time I've seen Inter Miami play, even in games that we won, there's been, obviously, we've got a lot of quality in terms of passing. We've got a lot of quality in terms of skill and technicality. But what this team seems to be missing is that dynamism and that spark and that raw athleticism, I think. That's what I'm getting at. I think the spark that Diego Gomez provides, I think we need more players of that profile to sometimes compete with teams like LA Galaxy or New York Red Bulls last weekend as well. I think we need to have that raw athleticism in there that can do a box-to-box role. And when someone like a Diego Gomez is not in that situation where we have someone like a Julian Gressel, I think that's too many players who like to take their time on the ball, who like to be too patient and who like to pass around a little bit. And that sort of takes away from playing against teams that we need to be more energetic against and need to be more offensively quick and fast against. So I completely agree with you. And I think at this point in time, for me, the three that midfield that we have that works best is Redondo, Sergio Busquets, and Diego Gomez, precisely because I think Redondo, while he's not as fast and as quick as Diego Gomez, has the defensive qualities to sit back and defend alongside Sergio Busquets. And then Diego Gomez has that athleticism to run box-to-box and be that box-to-box midfielder. So that balance right now is working really well. But I think we need to find a solution where, in case one of them is not available, we don't have the drop in quality or the drop in balance. And I think Benjamin Kramaski coming back is going to be a big, big plus in that regard.
Yeah, I'm sort of, in my head, there's like three different roles in our midfield, where there's the creator slash ball progressor in Sergio Busquets. There's the defensive midfielder that also is good on the ball, but can also cover defensively in Redondo. And then the box-to-box menace in the midfield in Diego Gomez. And it feels like if you swap out Gomez for Kramaski, you swap out Redondo for Yannick Bright, or if you swap out Busquets for Julian Gressel, you can still have that same midfield balance that the rest of the team can rely on and can count on without sort of disrupting everything you do. And so it's a good thing, like what you were talking about earlier, there's a lot of quality players in the midfield on this team, but it feels like there's a simple solution to every problem. And so the big picture point that we're trying to make in this is Tata has to understand that and get it right when he does have to rotate, when he does have guys unavailable. It's to keep that same midfield balance so that the team structurally from the center outwards is sound and can play good soccer.
Yeah, I think it's all about the combinations, because you can't have someone just come in just because they're a central midfielder. You can't have them come in and expect to do the same role as someone like a Diego Gomez or someone like a Redondo. I think they need to be the player of the right profile in order to make sure that balance is there. And then that's one aspect of it. And then the other aspect of it is the team that you're playing against. Because sometimes you're playing against teams that are really high in transition and in pressing. And then you need a completely different setup of a midfield. And that's where I want to see Tata Martino sometimes experiment and be fearless and maybe even dropping Sergio Busquets and trying Redondo in the Soul Six, or Redondo in the Soul Six with Cresso or Diego Gomez as the two up top, and not be afraid to put Sergio Busquets on the bench against certain teams that he might not have the same level of output against, because that will happen going forward.
Yeah, I don't know if I see a world where Sergio Busquets, when he's healthy and available and ready, is going to get put on the bench. So, I mean, obviously he'll get rotated in and out, and you know, he's not going to go on international duty, so he'll be around. So it feels like the majority of the times we're going to see him would be, you know, when he needs to get a break. Now, when that happens, I would love to see, you know, one of those things that you mentioned, one of those midfields that you mentioned. I'd love to see Redondo behind Kramaski and Diego Gomez one game. That would be a lot of fun for me. And I think even partnering Redondo with Yannick Bright and either Kramaski, or actually probably Kramaski in front of them, would be a really fun balanced midfield as well. And then, you know, you can throw in Julian Gressel when you don't have Sergio Busquets. So there's lots of ways to do it where you keep the midfield balanced, but as we lose Soar, but it does feel like there's plenty of depth options that keep the midfield balanced, and Tata just has to consistently pick the right guys. And it feels, at least I think to you and me, obvious which profiles fit together well. So number five, get the midfield right consistently so it has good balance and you can build your team from the midfield out to let your defense live up to what they can do and then to let your dynamic scorers score lots of goals. Moving to number four, and this for a lot of people would probably be number one, but the defense needs to improve slash hold up. Give me your top line thoughts.
I'm not convinced by this defense at all at this point in time. I think we need another defender, someone who's slightly quicker, someone who's faster than the available players that we have right now. And the depth that we have right now in the defense does not seem to me to be capable of winning four trophies. Those are my top line thoughts. I also think we might need an additional right back, but I'd love to hear your thoughts before we get into the meat of this.
We talked about this a couple weeks ago, about how much different you feel about the defense if you include Drake Callender and if you don't include Drake Callender. And I think we both felt decent about the defense if you include Drake Callender. Well, this past weekend, we didn't have Drake Callender, and the defense looked really, really bad. It's a problem, no doubt. It feels like the front office and Tata, the coaching staff, felt like Nico Freire was going to be the solution, or they felt like Ian Frey was going to be the solution, because it doesn't seem like they're going to go get another. I mean, they're not connected to anyone. They're not going to get another guy unless there's some sort of injury over the next couple weeks. This is who they're going to go with at center back. This is who they're going to go with on the at the fullback positions once they add Wigan. Kamal Miller was their best defender last year, and he would still be their best defender this year. They've downgraded in that regard. So I don't know if Nico Freire has like another gear that we haven't seen, because maybe he's been dealing with his hamstring injury. Maybe they just really expect Ian Frey to come back all guns blazing and stay healthy. But I agree with you, man. The whole offseason, I thought they needed a new center back number one, and it doesn't feel like they got it.
Yeah, I think with Nico Freire, I've seen some really good things, and then I've seen some things that I'm like, yeah, he's okay, but is he the number one center back? And is he the best center back in the MLS? I don't think so. I think if you add the pre-injury Ian Frey to the mix, then I would be more confident in this defense. And I'd be like, okay, yeah, we're talking now. There's some sort of athleticism that I need, some sort of injection of energy in this midfield, in this defense that, you know, we definitely are missing right now. But we don't know what level Ian Frey is going to come back with. He's dealt with a few injuries now, and it takes time for a player to come back to their peak level, especially I believe he's nursing an ACL injury. So we don't even know if he's going to come back in peak condition. So to rely on a post-injury Ian Frey to come and change this defense is, I think, a fool's strategy. But at this point in time, I think the major thing that's missing from this defense is speed. I think with the way we want to play, if we had a speedy defender in there who could potentially track defensive transitions and keep pace with the fastest of players, like a Paintsill, for instance, I think we'd be a lot less concerned about this midfield because this defense. Why do I keep calling it midfield? This defense, because I think that's what's the main thing that's missing. I think Nico Freire offers a lot in terms of structure and stability. He's got good positioning. He's really good with his defensive set pieces. He organizes the defense really well. I think Christophe brings in the same level of experience as well. He's obviously on the slower side, but he has the right intelligence and mindset to be able to position himself correctly and take out some of the athletic defects that he might have. I think Allen and Avilés are still too young. They're still raw. They're still being molded. I think Jordi Alba is perhaps the only player here where I'm comfortable saying that he's one of the best in his position in the MLS. But even he sometimes can be caught out in defense because he's a very offensive-minded left back. And then we don't even have a right back, so we can't even discuss that. So there's a lot missing in terms of the makeup of this defense. And as much of depth as we have in the midfield, I think this defense is very bare bones. So, and you're right, we're not going to get a defensive reinforcement in this window at least, and we're going to have to wait until the summer. So I think we really need an Ian Frey coming back in full force. Maybe even Franco Negri comes back and bolsters this defense a little bit. Perhaps allows us to play that 3-5-2 in a better manner than what it's looked so far. So a lot of questions to be asked of this defense. Not many answers at this point in time.
The MLS has traditionally not been known for its defenders because of all the salary rules. Teams generally spend the majority of their resources on goal scorers or guys that create offense. So there's always been a big difference in the quality of attackers versus the quality of defenders in this league. But it does feel like that's shrunk over the last couple of years. I watch other MLS games, and I just feel like every good team has a center back that you're like, that dude is solid. He knows what he's doing, and he's just a good, solid player. You know, like Orlando City has Janssen, who's just solid, solid player. And a lot of teams, especially in the East, brought new players to the team this winter. We talked about how the Red Bulls were missing Ailey, who is a good young center back. Orlando City brought in Brekalo. Atlanta brought in a nice big center back that's just a quality player. Inter Miami doesn't have that. And, you know, I don't know if they thought Freda was going to be that, but it doesn't feel like that's going to be the case. So listen, let's stop because it's not going to happen. There's no point in moaning over what's not here. What can these guys do to improve? Because, you know, we spent a lot of time on the podcast on Sunday talking about how much better structurally the 4-3-3 is compared to a back three, especially Tata's back three, where the two outside center backs play really wide and they leave a lot of space and the communication between the three is not always great. What can this team do? And we'll talk about formations in a few minutes, but what can these guys do to improve? Is it just about having a better goalkeeper behind you that can save some of your errors? Is it about getting the midfield right, which can transform how opportunities are coming at you? Or is there something this defense can do, that the guys in the defense, especially centrally, to be better?
Yeah, there are, for me at this point with the cards that we've been dealt, there are two solutions to this, right? In the 4-3-3, this defense looks a lot better. And our entire conversation about this defensive setup changes. Nico Freire looks a lot better. Christophe looks a lot better, as we saw against DC United. I think the fullbacks are a lot more comfortable going forward in the 4-3-3. So structurally, I think this defense is more suited to the 4-3-3. We're going to talk about that more. The second aspect that I think about is the midfield, like you mentioned. If you can't solve the personnel changes in defense, bolster the defensive reinforcements through the midfield. I think with Redondo sitting back a bit, this team looks a lot better. I think Having someone in the midfield who has the capability to be defensive but at the same time contribute an offense solves both problems. I think solves the midfield problem that we've been facing and solves the defensive problems, because I think it gives you an extra layer of cover where this team suffers the most in defensive transitions. When the opposition gets the ball and counters against us is when this team is at its most vulnerable. Having someone like a Frederico Redondo and potentially Yannick Bright sitting in that position, stopping those counters coming in, really helps this defense set up more quickly when we're on the defensive transition. We saw Yannick Bright do a bit of that against the Red Bull, I think. And I'm sure he's going to get more integrated into this team as we go forward. But that's my one solution. Just set up the midfield correctly to help this defense out.
There's one other thing that we haven't mentioned yet in this conversation, and that's that Toto Aviles is one of the most expensive defenders in MLS history. He's played every game so far. He started every game so far. Him and Julian Gressel are the only two that have done that. We play four games over the next 14 days. It feels like he's not going to start all four of them. And maybe him getting a game off, being on the bench, will rejuvenate him. We haven't seen him at his best so far this season. And it's, you know, he's a young player, high upside, but a young player that is still improving, and inconsistency is expected. There's a chance that he takes the next step and he does what Diego Gomez did this year. Well, you know, he'll do it over the next couple months as opposed to over the course of the offseason, but maybe he can just take that next step and become one of those dominant center backs that we see on other teams that really do make a big difference. So maybe that's the solution, and maybe they just expected Tomas Aviles to be better than he had been so far, and to expect him to take the next step and him being the center back number one.
Yeah, and for me, he is the number one center back from all the available center backs that we have at this point in time. And I think he definitely has a ceiling that he hasn't reached yet, and I do think he's definitely going to get better as the season progresses.
Is he your number one center back based on his performances or just based on how much he's been used and like his upside?
I think in terms of the performances and what I've seen, I think he has a lot of potential. And I think I would not have Freire and Cristal paired together. So that leaves Aviles as the only option who's going to play practically every other game. But I think there's definitely more to his game. And I think he has had good performances throughout the season in the defense as well. I don't think he's been one of the major reasons why this team has sometimes suffered in defense. I think the last couple of games, his performance levels have dropped. But that might be contingent on the fact that he's practically played every single... he started every single game, so...
Yeah, part of me thinks Kristoff's actually been a little bit better so far this season, but marginally. Let's move on to number three, and this is win the easy games. If Inter Miami is going to win the CONCACAF Champions Cup, they're going to have to beat Monterrey. They're going to have to beat really good teams. If they're going to win the MLS Cup, they're going to have to go through some really big games and beat really good teams. Same thing with Leagues Cup. But if they're going to win the Supporter Shield, which would be the fourth trophy, they are going to have to get points on the easy games. The games where they might have to rotate, the games where they might play away, but against teams that aren't so great, they have to be getting 3 points. They can't be dropping points like we've seen them do so far this year. They've already lost to Montreal at home, a team that, if they make the playoffs, will probably be, you know, eighth or ninth seed. New York Red Bulls on the road when the Red Bulls were missing three or four of their best players. Those feel like two games that Inter Miami, at least on paper, could have and should have won and gotten 6 points or 4 points or more than one or more than zero, rather. And yet here we are. They got 0 points from those two games. They dropped points against the LA Galaxy, although probably that was deserved. And then, you know, they played the first game on the road in the CONCACAF Champions Cup. They had to really struggle to get a 2-2 draw. But specifically this game last week against the Red Bulls and that game against Montreal, they dropped easy points. And not doing that is going to be the key to really having a successful run at the Supporters Shield.
Yeah, this is a very underrated point that I don't think a lot of people pay attention to. But throughout the course of the season, there are going to be more easier games as compared to difficult games. And the mark of a good team is how well they dispatch these easy games and how well they play in these easy games. I think when you play against an opposition that's better in quality to you or the same quality as you, I think there's just an extra effort the teams put in to try and beat these teams. I think when you're not the underdog, that's when the true character of a team shows up. So playing against teams like Montreal, playing against teams like New York Red Bulls, and all respect to them, I think they were really good in the games that we played against them. But this Inter Miami team on paper should have beaten them. I think winning those games is going to be super key, not just to win the Supporters' Shield, but I think to build momentum throughout the season. And that's going to be an opportunity for players who are on the fringe to try and make a case for them to start. I think is going to be a test of our depth when we're playing some of these easy games. It's going to be a test of our tactical acumen as well, because those might be the games that Tata Martino wants to experiment a little bit with our formation as well. So I think going into the season specifically, we can't be dropping points against teams like Montreal or teams like New York's Red Bull. Of course, this is just the start. This conversation would have been a lot different if we hadn't lost 3-0, 4-0 to New York Red Bulls. But I think those are going to be the games that are going to define our season going forward.
Last November, I went back and I looked at all of the games of the 2023 season, and I picked out the 10 games Inter Miami wanted back the most. And of course, number one was the US Open Cup final. And, you know, some of these games wouldn't fit this criteria. But of those games, there's a couple that really fit this criteria. We drew against NYCFC at home on September 30th. That was a game we were losing 1-0 going into extra time. We scored in extra time. David Ruiz had a chance to win it in extra time. We don't. We draw 1-1. Dropped 2 points at home. We lost 2-0 at Toronto last year early on. Toronto ended up being the worst team in MLS. We didn't play particularly well. I mean, it reminds me of this Red Bull game. We deserved to lose that game, but then looking back on it, that team was awful, and they got 3 points on us at their place. We went at Houston. We lost 1-0. It was a game that we played better than Houston, but we couldn't get the goals we needed. We played a DC United at home. Kamal Miller got a red card in like the 7th minute. We lose 2-1 and never really are in that game. DC didn't make the playoffs, wasn't very good. We lost 3-2 to Chicago at Drive Pink. That was a game we were losing 2-0. We fought all the way back to 2-2 and then dropped it in extra time to lose all 3 points. We played Austin, drew 1-1 at Drive Pink. That was not a very good Austin team. It's a game we probably should have won. There's another 2 points we dropped. You know, early in the season, we were away to Montreal. We didn't look good. We lost 1-0. It was another, you know, a couple points. It was definitely a point to be earned there. And anyways, the reason why I'm saying this is that was the difference between us making the playoffs and not making the playoffs. And yes, there were some games at the end where, you know, we dropped points, but we were already out of the playoffs. The games weren't, they didn't matter as much. And so those early games, when you compile points, it just puts you in a good position. And yes, you want to make sure you make the playoffs. Yes, you want to get home field advantage. Yes, you want to, you know, be as close to the top of the table as you can. But really, if you want to win the Supporter Shield, you have to be getting these 3 points when they come for you. And it feels like we've already missed two opportunities to get, you know, 3, 4, 6 points in those two games that we mentioned.
And I'm hoping that this season we don't have that many games where we end up dropping points unnecessarily. Because if that happens, it's going to be a disaster of a season. So I hope this season that record definitely improves. But there's also something to be said about momentum in general in football. I think when you're winning games consistently, it just gives you this extra push and helps you when you need to play against the bigger teams. It gives you that confidence to go in and be like, okay, yeah, we're here to stay. I think when you drop points unnecessarily from time to time, 3 points here, 1 point there, that can really mess with the momentum and the consistency of this team. And I think in order to win all four trophies. This team needs to be a well-oiled machine that can just dispatch teams left, right, and center. I think that that may be too much of wishful thinking on my part, but if we're aiming for all four trophies or even three trophies, this team needs to be ruthless and this team needs to be precise in the way it deals with some of these games.
Well, the thing you just said there, this team needs to be a well-oiled machine and they need to drill opponents. They have, this team has the talent to do it. On paper, we have enough talent, enough depth to win every single game we play, at least every game in the MLS. It should be possible. And so, yes, it's easy to be pessimistic after a game like Saturday, but to be optimistic, you know, as long as we don't have a lot of injuries, as long as we don't have key injuries, you know, to like the goalkeeper or the starting right winger, we should be okay. So let's move on to our second biggest must-have. And that is primarily using the 4-3-3 and throwing the 3-5-2 out the window.
As quickly as it comes, please get rid of the 3-5-2. No, but to your point, I don't think we should throw the 3-5-2 out the window. I just think we should put it in the back pocket. A good team is one that has a singular formation that they can use in multiple ways, but are comfortable with that singular formation and can play that with both their eyes shut. For this team, I think that formation is 4-3-3. And we spoke about being a well-drilled oil machine. This team needs to be able to play that 4-3-3 against any team and any opposition. Having 3-5-2 as a backup only in case when we need it in emergencies, when we need personnel changes, when there are injuries, is the way to go. I don't think 3-5-2 is the way forward, especially with Tata Martino's tactical setup. I think he wants this team to play in the 3-5-2 in a way that doesn't suit the personnel. And that just hampers the momentum of this team. And that just hampers the consistency with which this team plays. Because one weekend, this team looks like it's going to absolutely dominate the MLS. And then another weekend, this team looks like it's going to get absolutely destroyed by any team in the league. So I think we need to make sure that we drill the 4-3-3 to the point that it's absolutely perfect, that teams find it very difficult to beat us when we play that formation, and then rely on the 3-5-2 only in emergencies.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of when we'll need the 3-5-2. And it feels like if anything ever happens to Marcelo Wiegand, where he's out for more than, you know, just a rotation game, and then if we have some sort of injury crisis and the winger's spot, we already have been without Robbie Robinson. Really, it feels like without, other than Robert Taylor, Lionel Messi, and Julian Gressel, we don't have any wingers. Robinson's been hurt. They're talking about bringing in Matias Rojas, but we haven't gotten any update on that recently. So when we get him, that'll make me feel a lot better. But it just feels like everywhere else, we have what it takes to play a 4-3-3, not just a starting 11, but a second person in each spot that can step in and make it work. And so this team, you know, we talked about the defensive structures. We talked about getting the midfield right. All of that becomes easier if you put them in a system they're comfortable with, where the structure of the team dictates defensive solidity and then allows you to play good defense and then let your stars on offense do what they do to score goals. That feels like a recipe to win a lot of games to me. So I'm with you. There, I kind of made this a slash, champion the 4-3-3 slash figure out how to do a 3-5-2, because we're going to see it again. I don't want to make any, you know, give any false impressions. It's going to happen, but sticking with the 4-3-3 when possible, I think is going to be a major key. And maybe we can get back to the 3-5-2 in a second, but talk to me about why the 4-3-3 is so important.
I think in terms of personnel, the balance with the 4-3-3 is so much more crisp and solid. The defense just looks a lot better when we have the 4-3-3. You don't see as many gaps in the defense. The players know exactly where their positions are, who to be marking at what time, which defender needs to go slightly forward, where the line needs to be. I think the wingbacks or the fullbacks in the 4-3-3 one goes up, the other stays slightly back, so it leaves it. It provides that offensive outlook by at the same time having the defensive solidity of not having both fullbacks bombing forward. And then just in the midfield as well, I think with 4-3-3, we are able to contract and expand the field at our own will, which is saying a lot. I think we can play expansive when we need to stretch teams out. We can be more compact when we need to be defensively sound. And it just, I think, works a lot better. And also having the three up top with Suarez, Messi, and Robert Taylor provides us a lot more offensive flexibility, because when you have Messi dropping back in that midfield, it just, he becomes the number 10. Then someone like Aguero can maybe push back slightly more defensive, or Redondo can be slightly more defensive, which automatically gives us a lot more defensive cover. And then we become a 4-5-2 of sorts, with Robert Taylor playing that wing slash central position, and then Suarez obviously as the primary striker. So I think just in terms of how we, how this structure plays out with the 4-3-3, is a lot more smooth, is a lot more tactically sound, and these players are a lot more comfortable playing that position.
Yeah, I think the two biggest things are it forces the two center backs to play a little bit more narrow, which protects them in transition opportunities for the opposing team. And then it also gives you another outlet in the back line for when you need to get out of trouble. You have four defenders plus one to two midfielders that can help you get out of trouble. So you have, it like gives you more excuses or more players to not turn the ball over to, you know? And those midfield turnovers, we've seen them a lot. And not just from Tota Aviles or some of the young guys, but Sergio Busquets and Jordi Alba had a bunch over the last couple of weeks. And so creating a structure that gives you plenty of outlets to play out, and then also a structure that gives you two center backs that play a little bit more narrow, not as much width, I think helps your defense stay solid and creates an opportunity where you turn the ball over less in the midfield. Two things that really play in Miami's favor, because once you get the ball going forward, once you really start to dominate possession, you can really step on the throat of the other team, and it really makes everything a lot easier. Here's a good question. Any chance that we're going to see a 4-4-2 with Gressel in the midfield alongside Gomez, Redondo, Busquets, and having Robert Taylor coming off the bench?
Yeah, it might even be a possibility. And I'm not sure why Tata actually hasn't used this formation, because
it's the right back.
Yeah.
But from now on, we should have one.
But if you notice, I think, I forget which game this was, but we were playing 3-5-2, and this was the best that the 3-5-2 has looked the entire time that we played. And I, for the life of me, cannot remember who this team was that we were playing the 3-5-2 against.
It was Nashville.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Nashville.
Second leg, yeah.
But in that game, when we were defending off the ball in the 3-5-2, our structure was actually a 4-4-2 with Gressel falling back in that right back position and supporting, turning it into a back four rather than a back three. And that's the way this 3-5-2 will work if you want to play with these personnel on that pitch. Having that 4-4-2 defensive structure and the 3-5-2 offensive structure. So we've actually already seen Tata use that. But there's definitely utility for the 4-4-2. I'm a big fan of the old school 4-4-2, having two big strikers up top. So why not? But I think it's going to be more flexible than just an outright 4-4-2.
I think once we get Chelo Weigand in, having that right back that Tata is going to trust and feel good about throwing out there, I think it opens the 4-4-2 in a way that we would be comfortable with. It would help our defensive back line. It would give these things that we like about the 4-3-3, the structure, but also provides some flexibility if you don't have all your wingers, or if Lionel Messi isn't, you know, playing that game or whatever. You still have two nice strikers to put up there. So I do think actually that the 4-4-2 might become our second formation at some point this year, just because it fits our personnel the best, at least compared to a 3-5-2.
And just to add to that point, I think we've seen that Tata is not averse to using Suarez and Campana together up top. I don't think he sees both of them as two switches. Like he's not averse to playing both of them together. So in that sense, it might even be the case that when we're playing the 4-3-3 in the second half, he brings on Campana alongside Suarez and we switch to a 4-4-2 of sorts. So there's definitely potential to see this formation going into the season.
Yeah, and we've seen Robert Taylor play as a second striker as well, and we've seen Lionel Messi play as part of a front two. So definitely it's in the cards. The last thing, though, I want to say is I do think we're going to see a 3-5-2 some, and so figuring out how to deal with the 3-5-2's weaknesses, especially from our back line, is going to go a long way to not losing the easy games, to making sure the defense holds up, and to making sure the midfield looks better. So getting better at the 3-5-2 is also important. Let's move to the number one thing on our list, most important for Inter Miami to win four trophies this year. And that's to make sure that the brightest stars are ready to go when the lights are the brightest. This is it's a cop-out. It's too easy to say, but the biggest thing standing in the way between Inter Miami and winning trophies this year is Lionel Messi being healthy when the big games come. We're going to play Monterrey at home in a must-win game next Wednesday. We're not 100% sure Lionel Messi is going to play. The same applies to Luis Suarez to a slightly lesser degree. Drake Callender, I think, probably number three on that list in terms of most important guys for, you know, the big games. How important is this?
Add Wigan to that list as well, because he's the only right back we have. And if he's unfit, then we're going to have to see the 3-5-2 again. This is super, super important. I think you mentioned this earlier and you alluded to this, that Lionel Messi's injuries can sometimes be underestimated. I think both of us thought that when he was taken off against Nashville, it was a precaution, but he's been out for a longer time than we thought. Similar to his injury last year, he was out for a significant time. He's at a stage in his career where, you know, he's not fully fit no matter what he does, which is fine given his age, which means we need to manage his minutes. We need to make sure that he's available in the games that matter the most, because he is going to be our difference maker no matter what. You've seen time and time again in the last few games, when he's not available, we don't have that immediate game changer. If we're losing 2-0, I don't put it past Messi to just take the ball and score three and make us win that game. He's just that important. And for him to be fit, for him to be available, and for this team to go and win four trophies, that is the most crucial point. And this is not to say that this team is entirely dependent on Lionel Messi. I read somewhere on Twitter the other day where someone mentioned that Messi winning a trophy with this Inter Miami team is going to be a big, big achievement for him, because he's going to basically have to drag this team to a trophy. I don't think that's the case. I think there's plenty of talent in this Inter Miami team to go and win a majority of games without Lionel Messi in this team and playing regularly. But that's not to say that having Messi doesn't change the dynamics of this team. It just turns this team into a dangerous weapon. So I think it's really important.
Just to piggyback on that point, I think this is, if you take Lionel Messi off this roster, I still think it might be the best team in MLS. Columbus is very good. FC Cincinnati is pretty good. The Galaxy are pretty good. There's some other teams. Inter Miami's right there, even without Lionel Messi. They could win the MLS Cup without Lionel Messi. But they're not obviously the best team. They're not overwhelmingly the best team. Lionel Messi's the guy that takes this team from good, very good, to the best team in MLS and the favorite to win every game they play. We're going to find out a lot next Wednesday about how this team stacks up to a team like Monterrey. I'm very nervous about that game, and I would be extremely nervous if Lionel Messi didn't play. Monterrey is going to be very good. I think they're going to be better than any team we play in the MLS this year. When it comes to winning the CONCACAF Champions Cup, I don't think we can do that without Lionel Messi playing every game. And even for the other trophies, it's like, yes, they can win any game they play, but are they the favorites to win every game they play. Do you feel good about them winning every big game? You know, we're going to go play Columbus. And listen, that game's not going to be until the end of the season in Columbus. But are you going to, would you feel good about going into Columbus right now and beating them without Lionel Messi? Sure, Luis Suarez can score a brace and we can win that game. But you just don't feel as good about it without Lionel Messi, who, as much as I love Luis Suarez, Lionel Messi has still been the best player this season so far, at least, you know, according to all the advanced analytics. So it would be really tough. I also want to say that this whole point, this number one on our list, is not just about Lionel Messi. It's about Luis Suarez. It's about Drake Callender. To a lesser extent, it's about Jordi Alba and Sergio Busquets. You know, we saw how much we dropped off in that first Nashville game without Jordi Alba. And so it's not just Lionel Messi. It's all of these guys. If they're not firing on all cylinders, right? In that first Nashville game, we had Lionel Messi and Suarez, but Jordi Alba made a big difference. Or, you know, going from Jordi Alba to Noah Allen is a big difference. Keeping these guys healthy and available and making sure they're available in the right moments is the number one thing for this team if they want to win four trophies.
There's also a psychological factor. Like when you see Lionel Messi on that team sheet, the defense automatically has a completely different mindset than when he's not on there. Then you think, oh, we're going to be able to take this off and so on if Lionel Messi is not playing. But when he's on the team sheet, it just completely changes the dynamics of how the opposition views this Inter Miami team. Same goes for Luis Suarez as well. These players are so exceptionally talented and they're so... They've done so much in their careers that no matter who we're up against, that team's going to definitely have that in the back of their mind, that these are the greats of football. And going up with Lionel Messi in my lineup is a lot better than going up without Lionel Messi in my lineup. And same goes for Luis Suarez as well. So I think it's an underrated point that availability is an important factor for this team to win four trophies. But it really is in terms of all these star players that we have.
Okay, those are our five most important things that need to happen for Inter Miami to win four trophies. Get the midfield right consistently. The defense needs to hold up, win the easy games, stick with the 4-3-3, and champion that formation as your formation, and then make sure the best players are ready when the moment's brightest. We had one honorable mention that we thought was important to talk about. We won't spend 10 minutes on it, but the last one that we thought of was the roster is not perfect as it is. Chris Henderson has been trying to reformat this roster ever since Tata Martino arrived, ever since Lionel Messi arrived. He's still working to get Chelo Wiegand, still clearing space, traded John Mota, DeAndre Yedlin after the season started. He's not resting on his laurels. We're still trying to bring in Matias Rojas. This summer, there's going to be another transfer window, and we have to make sure that we attack it and fill our needs and cover up any weaknesses, whether that means getting another right back, whether that means getting another forward because we have a couple injuries, or whether that means we get a new center back. We need to attack that window to make sure that going into Leagues Cup, going into the run for the Supporter Shield, and then going to MLS Cup, we have a roster that can and will win those last three trophies.
Yeah, bring me Neymar and Sergio Roberto, and we're talking a completely different game.
So all that conversation about adding a center back, and you're going to go with Neymar and Sergio Roberto.
Hey, if we score 10 goals, who cares about how many we let in, right?
Yeah. Before we go, there was an Athletic article today, and maybe we'll just talk about it for a few brief minutes, but I just wanted to get your thoughts on some of the contents of that article. They do this every year, or they've done it for the last couple of years, where they interview a MLS executive from each team. Generally, it's the sporting director, so for Miami, this would be Chris Henderson. If not, it's that person's right-hand man. And I want to go over some of the results, not too many, because it's a paywall article, so I won't spill too much of the beans. But the first one that I wanted to mention was 12 out of 30 execs picked Inter Miami to win the MLS Cup. Less than half. But Columbus and Inter Miami together, made up the vast majority of them. Inter Miami was the favorite. Thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not overly surprised by this. A lot of this is driven by internal biases as well. But 12 out of 30 is, you know, right about there. I think Columbus is a really good team. And from what we've seen so far with the Inter Miami games, it's a little bit hit and miss. So I'm not surprised that it's 12 out of 30 because Columbus has had an absolutely blistering start to this. So, yeah, not too shabby.
Just skipping forward, best move of the winter. Joseph Paintsill won with 33% of the vote. Only three people picked Luis Suarez. Do you think that's going to be the same answer moving forward? I know Luis Suarez is probably only going to be here for 1 year, and Joseph Paintsill is going to potentially impact the trend, you know, how that franchise is viewed moving forward. But still, Luis Suarez has been that good so far.
I think for this Inter Miami team to win the MLS Cup, Luis Suarez has to be the MVP. I think he will be the MVP by the end of the season. He's on track. He's definitely shown that whatever injury supposedly that he's been carrying has absolutely no effect. And he's just that player who's going to score goals and make that difference every time he's on the pitch. So the fact that only 3 out of 30 chose him goes to show that they are underestimating Luis Suarez as a player. But Paintsill is a big shout. He's a great player, and I think he was very dominating against Miami when we played Galaxy. And going forward, he's going to be a big, big player for them.
Yeah, he's fun to watch. I don't know how many Galaxy games you watched so far this year, but he is fun to watch, man. He is electric. Just one more before we go. And this is sort of a big question that's been on the mind of a lot of MLS people over the last 12 months since Messi announced he's coming to Miami. But is Miami, what Miami's doing, good for the MLS? 18 out of 30 said yes. 5 said it was good and bad, and 4 people said it was bad. I looked at some of the responses, and a lot of them were like thinking Miami might not be doing everything the right way. Right. And so I don't know. Does that surprise you that it's not unanimous that this is good?
I'm actually surprised at the 18 out of 30 people who think that this is good, because I would have definitely thought that there'd be more executives going in and saying, oh, Inter Miami's not playing by the books and MLS is changing rules to suit Inter Miami, because that's been a lot of the conversation in the offseason. We obviously saw an article by somebody saying that the executives are sure that Inter Miami is going to get done in for not complying with the MLS rules. So I'm surprised 18 out of 30 think it's good. But yeah, not surprised that it's not the entirety of the executives who are in favor of Inter Miami.
Yeah, let's wrap it up there. There's some other good questions in that article, but like I said, they're all behind a paywall. So if you're interested in will Miami win a trophy this year, or which team had the best offseason and where Miami ranks there, go ahead and check that article out. It was by Tom Bogard at The Athletic. But let me just check to make sure nothing's happened while we went live. I know there's some other Inter Miami content going live tonight, so we won't keep you guys too long. But as always, we really appreciate you tuning in. We'll be back for the pregame show in the hour before kickoff Saturday night. I think this is our first Saturday night game of the season, so that's fun. 6:30 Eastern time, and we'll see you there. Anything you want to say before we head out, Sor?
It's a big game coming up this weekend. I think it's going to answer a lot of questions that we have about the Inter Miami team. But as always, excited to see what the game holds and then what the conversations are after that. So please join us.
All right, guys. See you next time. And as always, thank you for tuning in.